From Cowdersport to Connellsville, Breezewood to Irwin, this is Lincoln Radio Journal. On this edition, a decade-old law has pushed the Pennsylvania Turnpike to the brink of bankruptcy. This is just one of the challenges facing the state Senate's new Transportation Committee chairperson, Senator Kim Ward. She is here to discuss. A proposal by Governor Wolf to raise the minimum salary for public school teachers will have a profound impact on school district budgets. Frank Gamrat and Eric Montardi of the Allegheny Institute have details. And if you are a state taxpayer or you pay an electric bill, hold on to your checkbook. The nuclear power industry is looking for a bailout. Anna McCausland of Americans for Prosperity Pennsylvania has a Lincoln Radio Journal commentary. I'm Loman Henry, and welcome to Lincoln Radio Journal. We'll get to State Senator Kim Ward in just a couple of minutes, but first we have news headlines from patownhall.com. At one time, she was one of the Pennsylvania Democratic Party's fastest rising stars. Former Attorney General Kathleen Kane has now been disbarred by the Disciplinary Board of the Pennsylvania Supreme Court. Kane is currently in prison, serving a 10 to 23-month sentence after having been convicted of perjury, obstruction, and other offenses. Kane was the first and only woman to be elected state attorney general. She was also the first ever Democrat to hold the post. Climate change was the focus of a legislative hearing this past week as House Environmental Resources Chairman Daryl Metcalf of Butler County heard testimony from geologist-turned-author Gregory Wrightstone. Wrightstone has written a book entitled Inconvenient Facts, The Science Al Gore Doesn't Want You to Know. It is filled with scientific evidence debunking many of the myths spread by environmental extremists about climate change. Wrightstone recently found himself in a controversy after Apple banned an app related to the book. This prompted an outcry from the national conservative media condemning the censorship of the geologist's work. And Tuesday is Election Day in the 37th State Senate District in Allegheny County, as voters will go to the polls to select a senator to fill the seat vacated earlier this year when Guy Reschenthaler resigned to take a seat in Congress. Republicans have nominated entrepreneur and Allegheny County GOP Chairman Dee Raja, while Democrats are pinning their hopes on Navy veteran Pam Iovino. In political terms, the 37th is a swing district, meaning it is highly competitive, having had both Democrat and Republican senators in recent years. In a related development, Republicans in the nearby 41st Senate District in Indiana County have selected Joe Pittman as their nominee for a special election to be held in conjunction with the May primary, this to fill the seat left vacant by the resignation of Senator Don White. Pittman was White's longtime chief of staff. The district leans heavily Republican, so Pittman enters the race as the front runner. Read about all things Pennsylvania at patownhall.com. Auditor General Eugene D. Pasquale says the Pennsylvania Turnpike is nearing bankruptcy. This, while an adverse ruling in a federal lawsuit could cost that agency hundreds of millions of dollars. This has triggered a shortfall in funding for PennDOT, and the state's mass transit agencies continue to be awash in red ink. All of these challenges face the new chairperson of the state Senate's Transportation Committee. Senator Kim Ward represents Westmoreland County in the Senate. She's prepared to grapple with these problems. Senator, welcome to Lincoln Radio Journal. Kim, we want to talk about a wide range of transportation issues, but let's start out. Auditor General Eugene D. Pasquale, a week or so ago, came out with another report on the Pennsylvania Turnpike Commission. It's headed into very serious financial waters, perhaps already there. First of all, tell us a little bit about how the turnpike got to where it is.
I think a large part of it is the legislation in 2007 that mandated the turnpike to give $450 million a year to PennDOT to cover mass transit. And that is 25 to 30% of their budget. So you get that $450 million bucks, you get $200 million of it going to SEPTA, $100 million of it going to the Port Authority. You have some other funds that they use for grants. And I think it's about $25 million for the other transit authorities. It heavily subsidizes mass transit. which I think we all can agree, it's important. Mass transit is important, especially in the big cities where we're just going to have more cars on the road. But the question is, what can we do to help them help themselves? And I think we can address that later in the conversation. So that's a big bite. And as a result of that, we have our turnpike tolls going up. For example, the area I represent has 3 turnpike exchanges, and we have 66, which is a bypass, which is pay, and it borders still Westmoreland County, 48. So the folks in the some of these counties that don't have the kind of door-to-door mass transit that you would have if you wanted to go to the store, you wanted to go to the mall, they've been paying a lot higher fees to drive on the roads, and our gas taxes have gone up continuously every year. So that definitely is something that needs to be addressed. And there is, in the last legislation, in the transportation bill, they said that, well, you know, in that bill, it states that in 2022, this goes away. So the $450 million goes away regardless of the court case outcome, and we have to find a way to address it. We can't stick our heads in the sand and say, oh, when it goes away, we'll worry about it. So I think part of our job and part of this working group is to look forward, look down the road and say, what is it that we can start or we can initiate, or what ideas do we have out there to fix this problem? Because we can't just let mass transit hang there totally on its own. And one of the things that we are talking about is, besides perhaps enabling legislation that they can help themselves, is this group, our job should be, well, how are they doing this in other states? What are they doing in other states? I don't have the answer to that, but it's one of the things that we are starting to look at.
You referenced the fact that there is a court case, and for our listeners who may not be familiar, there are a couple of trucker associations that have filed a federal lawsuit, and they want a refund of their part of their tolls that they have paid because the money is not going to the turnpike. It's going to, as the senator has just mentioned, it's going to mass transit. It's going to PennDOT. A similar case in New York State was won by the truckers associations. So, Kim, if we look at this, the turnpike could potentially be on the hook for billions of dollars. Is any thought being given to how the turnpike and the state is going to respond if they get an adverse ruling?
Well, I can tell you, if we get an adverse ruling, it will be scrambling here like I've never seen the likes of before in history. We're hoping not to get that adverse ruling, but if it does, I don't know. It's something that we're going to have to focus on, and what we can be working on as we're working together here. I met with the Commonwealth Foundation a week or two ago. This week we met with just the 4 chairs, and these are all really big headaches.
What I seem to be sensing is that for the first time, even though this has been a looming issue for many years, and you can tell me whether you're seeing this as chairman of the Transportation Committee, there's starting to be a realization in the legislature and a realization at the Turnpike and a realization at PennDOT that, hey, we have a real serious problem here.
I think there's an urgency that we need to embrace.
We are talking with State Senator Kim Ward, who represents part of Westmoreland County, that, of course, in the suburban Pittsburgh area. She is the new chairperson of the State Senate Transportation Committee. A lot of problems landing on her desk. So let's talk a little bit about mass transit, Kim. In addition to the funding issues, as you're looking at ways that other states handle mass transit, is any thought being given to how our mass transit systems, which frequently are inefficient and plagued with corruption, ways that we can bring about efficiencies as well?
Yes, I think there is. And one of the things that we're looking at very, very closely and looking at immediately is some enabling these counties to participate in the funding of their mass transit. As we talked about, the turnpike fees going up and that going to mass transit. We have to realize that something has to be done, and win or lose this legislation, these places need to be able to keep their mass transit and keep their trains rolling and their buses rolling. So by perhaps giving them some skin in the game in those counties that want to do that, it would be a May legislation, a piece of May legislation, and it would probably be Philly, Pittsburgh, some of those areas. By giving them some skin in the game, more skin in the game, that forces them to look at efficiencies. It forces them to say, does that bus need to run every 30 minutes when it's not full every 30 minutes. Maybe that bus needs to run every hour. It forces them to look at where they could be saving. And that's just something that I'm very strongly, strongly considering at this point.
Let's talk also for a couple of minutes. Funding for police, the state police, municipal police, has been put on the table by Governor Wolf, who thinks that townships or municipalities that do not have a local police department, but which depend upon the state police for police protection and services, should now be paying a per capita fee. I would be interested in your thoughts on that. And do you really think that the governor's plan or proposal will generate the revenue he thinks it will?
No, I think the governor is I think it was $106 million he thought he would get from the police with the taxes. But if you go into these municipalities, that now they're going to get the same service and pay millions more. They're not going to do that. So I don't think you're going to get the money for that. They'll find another way around it. Tell us what is the description of a police department? Is it two part-time officers? What is that? I don't believe it brings in the money, and it really doesn't address the entire issue at hand. So they serve municipalities as the primary source, the ones that don't have a police department. But they also provide services to those departments with a police department. We have requested the information, and I look forward to getting it soon. They have that broken down and what they do in every municipality. So should those municipalities without police, should there be some type of fee, pay more? Absolutely, than those that don't have police. But should everyone pay for that service? Because they are for some part of that service. Because they do serve everyone. They turn over half of their ticket fees to the municipalities with police, as well as turning it over to the motor license fund. They use their DNA labs. They go in and back up events that happen. So should municipalities without police pay more? Yes. But everyone should pay for this. And I don't think the governor's proposal brings in the income that you need. Well, if you only have 3,000 people, you're not going to pay. Well, it costs money to protect 3,000 people, just like it does to protect 10,000 people. I don't think that's it's good legislation. I've had a bill for years, but I guess it doesn't really address the problem. I put it out there that municipalities would be permitted to give the state police money, and they would be able to hire on top of their complement with that money. But, you know, it does face obstacles, and we haven't been able to move it anywhere. So it's another complicated issue, but I don't think it's nearly as complicated as the turnpike.
Well, unfortunately, the turnpike issue is very complicated, and we the people are paying more and more and more to drive on it, and some people are now driving around it. So a lot of these issues about to hit home, and many of them going to land before the Senate Transportation Committee, where State Senator Kim Ward of Westmoreland County is the chairperson. And Senator, if we have listeners who would like to learn more, can you give us a website where folks can go to read more about these transportation issues and what you're doing as a state senator and as chair of the Transportation Committee?
Sure. And we are just updating my website now as to put everything up that we're working on, but it's just senatorward.com.
Senatorward.com. We have been talking with State Senator Kim Ward. Kim, thank you for being with us.
Thank you.
A proposal to set a $45,000 per year minimum wage for public school teachers would have a ripple effect on budgets in the state's 500 school districts. Here to explain are Frank Gamrat and Eric Montardi from the Allegheny Institute for Public Policy. Eric?
Hello, and welcome to the Allegheny Institute Report on the Lincoln Institute Radio Journal. I'm Eric Montardi. Joining me today is Frank Gamrat. Frank, we've heard a little bit about a minimum wage proposal as it applies to just the general minimum wage proposals right. That you usually hear about, but you recently wrote about one that deals with a specific segment of the public sector workforce that was maybe kind of surprising to people to hear that there actually is some sort of minimum wage that exists now. And what the proposal would do going forward. So why don't you give our listeners an insight into this this recent brief that you wrote about what the governor is proposing for public school teachers?
Absolutely. When the governor released his budget back in February, there was a little section in there called Building the Nation's Strongest Workforce, Attracting and Retaining the Best Teachers for Our Kids. And in it, he references that back in the 1980s, there was legislation to put a minimum on teacher and professional professional salary is at $18,500 per year, and he wants to raise that to $45,000 per year in 2019-20 going forward. And so, you know, it just got us thinking, well, how much do teachers actually make? And, of course, all this data is available on the state education website. And so we started looking at how much teachers make, and we were surprised to see the range. The lowest amount in this range is Turkey Valley Area School District at $37,400 average a year. Highest is Council Rock out in Montgomery County, I believe, and they're at $99,000 plus per year. So a pretty long range of salaries, you know, average salaries for teachers in that school district. So that just got us kind of wondering, you know, is this even necessary? And if it is, if they push it through, what will this mean for school districts and the taxpayers of Pennsylvania?
Yeah, that's interesting, Frank, because as we've talked about over the years, the public school teachers are represented by bargaining units, and they bargain with the school districts. And typically what they look at is they say, here's how much the teachers are making in the neighboring district. I don't think they've ever gone back and said, well, here's this minimum wage law that was there in the 1980s. But this proposal, obviously what we're talking about is pushing a wage floor up that would come into play in 2019. And you said, talked about this range. So basically 33 is a low, 99. So is there an average teacher salary statewide?
Average statewide is $67,535. So that's the average teacher salary across the Commonwealth of Pennsylvania. These are, of course, public school teachers, K through 12.
Got it. Okay. So let's just look at it in terms of, as you would with any other minimum wage proposal. If you have teachers, or let's say even you had a school district where all the teachers were below the minimum that is proposed, this $45,000, how would that affect them?
Oh, absolutely. You know, let's get to the real basics of this, and that is, you know, with these public sector contracts, teacher contracts are negotiated by the union. They come in steps. You know, think of it as a ladder. And at the bottom of the ladder, you have your introductory people, and then over the years, they move up the ladder until they become higher paid teachers. So there's probably not that many teachers earning less than $45,000 a year in this Commonwealth. One union rep in a newspaper article said it's less than 3,000, or around 3,000 teachers. So, okay, let's say a school district only has three or four people below $45,000 and they decide to give them a raise. Well, it's not just going to affect those three teachers. What's going to happen is it's going to reverberate throughout the entire ladder. That is, every other rung will have to be raised incrementally. If one teacher's making $32,000, they would require a $13,000 raise to get them to $45,000. Well, if you've got someone at $43,000, they require a $2,000 raise. Are they going to be happy, you know, getting only a $2,000 raise when a colleague got a $13,000 raise? Unlikely. So this is going to squeeze up and push up all of the rungs on the ladder so that everybody receives an incremental raise about the same length to maintain that harmony amongst the steps of the ladder. So you get to that point, and then let's talk about some of the other non-wage costs that would come up with this. Of course, pensions are the biggest deal with school districts right now. We all know that every school district across the Commonwealth is dealing with pension increases, pension payments, because it's an underfunded issue. And so the pension payments are, of course, based on salary. So if you're pushing salary up, eventually you're going to push pension payments up and pension obligations for schools. And then you get into the smaller salary-based perks, things like Social Security taxes, unemployment compensation. All of this will have to be paid by the district based on the salaries of the teachers that they're employing. So it could have a tremendous effect on the budgets of school districts.
Has there been any mention made, like you had talked about, that if the state would change this and you had teachers below, what if the district's like in the middle of a contract? Did they just say like that the next contract you would, again, this is if this thing would pass, that the district would then be mandated to make that lowest step on the ladder at the floor here? Is that what they're saying, or has that been mentioned?
It has not been mentioned in the legislation, but my guess would be that the teachers' unions would probably knock on the door of the school board and say, hey, look, we need to talk. And it's probably not a conversation that the school board is going to want to have, sure, because there's now a law that says we can't make below $45,000. So my guess is it would probably take effect immediately, and the school boards would have to scramble to figure out how to pay for this. Because keep in mind that in Pennsylvania, the school districts are funded not only with state dollars but local dollars. And either way, it's coming out of our taxpayer pockets. So at the local level, you have Council Rock, which gets, 70% of their money from their local district property taxes, income taxes. Or you have something as small as Duquesne here in Allegheny County that gets only 7% or 8% of their funding. So you end up with this notion of the locals are going to have to pay for the bulk of this, and then the state will probably pick up the rest given the makeup of the district. How do they get their funds? Either way, state taxpayers are going to be picking up a tremendous bill from this proposal.
Wow. It's interesting, Frank, mm-hmm. because again, as you talked about this mixture and obviously the differences between school districts, like you mentioned, one here in this part of the state and then out east, just with a different mm-hmm. level of pay and how this minimum wage would be affected.
Well, let's put this into another perspective. And in as much as we talk about Turkey Foot Valley, for those of you not familiar, they're in Somerset County. And in Somerset County, if you look at the salaries of all of the other workers in Somerset County, it's $41,000. So if the teachers are mandated to make $45,000, where they're currently making an average of $37,400, they're going to be making more than everybody else in the county. How fair is it to ask those people in the county making less than that to support these teachers? You get some teachers, for example, in Montgomery and Bucks counties, the average worker earns $59,600, yet you've got teachers with an average of anywhere from $90,000 to $99,700. They're already making more than the average workers, yet you're asking them to pay up. So these protected classes who get their contracts negotiated by the unions, who evidently can't do their jobs, they ask the governor to come to their defense. And where's the fairness there?
Frank, as always, our listeners can go to our website, which is AlleghenyInstitute.org, and read your brief. They can follow us on Twitter. They can look through the archives at topics you covered on minimum wage, this teacher's proposal, state and local education funding mix. It's all there in our archives. For Frank Gamrat, this is Eric Montardi. This has been the Allegheny Institute Report on the Lincoln Institute Radio Journal.
Nuclear power can't compete with natural gas, so the industry is looking for a bailout from either taxpayers or ratepayers. Anna McCausland of Americans for Prosperity Pennsylvania has this Lincoln Radio Journal commentary.
Have you heard about the proposed nuclear bailout in Harrisburg? I know we've talked about it before, but it's an issue I cannot stop talking about. Our organization exists to break down barriers because a free people can accomplish extraordinary things. As we work to move toward changing our culture where people succeed by helping others, individuals will have a better opportunity to reach their unique potential in the way they define it for themselves. When we talk about barriers that prevent people from succeeding, the government can be a pretty obvious source. Strenuous licensing requirements on professions like cosmetology, all of the hoops that the government makes people jump through just to earn money that the government then garnishes in the form of taxes. Business owners have additional barriers in the form of regulations that are also costly. They pass the cost down to consumers. It's a cycle. Imagine the government arbitrarily increasing your energy bill. That's what House Bill 11 would do. We're not anti-nuclear. We are pro all forms of energy, especially those that do not need government subsidies to survive. Among them is the nuclear industry. We want companies to be profitable, which at $600 million in 2008, the nuclear industry in Pennsylvania is profitable. At worst, the proposal is a solution in search of a problem, and there are many examples of solutions in search of a problem in Harrisburg. We believe all energy sources have a role to play in electricity generation. The whole purpose of a competitive market is to encourage efficiencies and expand choices that enable consumers to buy the goods and services they want at the best price possible. If competitive pressures are responsible for the decrease in profitability that nuclear generators are allegedly experiencing, that means competition is working. Therefore, it would be foolish, if not unreasonable, to force consumers to purchase an overpriced product from a non-competitive market participant. House Bill 11 would amend the 2004 Alternative Energy Portfolio Standards Act, AEPS. That would direct utilities to purchase power from all carbon-free generators, including nuclear, wind, solar, and other zero-carbon sources. AEPS is currently at 15% and will automatically increase to 18% by 2021. If you create Tier 3 for the nuclear industry at 50%, that would take the AEPS total to 68%, which would wall off over two-thirds of the market and leave only a third remaining for electric competition. Natural gas and coal make up 60% currently and would be fighting over that last 32%. The nuclear bailout is a socially regressive tax on electricity, which would fall hardest on people who can least afford it. According to the Home Energy Affordability Gap, more than 1 million households in Pennsylvania are experiencing unaffordable home energy burdens, in many cases having to keep their home at an unhealthy temperature, or worse, having to forgo necessities such as medicine, food, or pay their energy bills. There is also absolutely no risk to the reliability of the Pennsylvania energy supply. PJM, that stands for Pennsylvania, New Jersey, Maryland, Interconnection, the Mid-Atlantic Power Pool. Their message to the General Assembly was unequivocal. There is no risk to reliability if nuclear plants were to close. So if the nuclear energy companies are healthy and profitable, the market is largely competitive, and if Three Mile Island were to close, there would be no impact on our energy supply, why would we raise Pennsylvania's energy bills a collective $500 million for the rest of time to give the nuclear industry a handout? There are no good reasons. Now that you know, visit AmericansForProsperity.com. Then share it with your family, your friends, and your colleagues. We make that all easy on social media. Find us on Twitter at AFP Pennsylvania and on Facebook by searching for Americans for Prosperity Pennsylvania. I'm Anna McCausland, Deputy State Director with Americans for Prosperity, PA.
If you miss hearing Lincoln Radio Journal on your favorite radio station, audio of our complete program is available on our websites, LincolnRadioJournal.com and LincolnInstitute.org. For 24 years, Lincoln Radio Journal has been heard on public affairs-minded radio stations throughout the Commonwealth. They include WIOV-FM in Ephrata, WZSK-AM in Everett, along with WERG-FM at Gannon University in Erie, Pennsylvania. And the Pennsylvania Leadership Conference is now just days away. This year is the 30th anniversary of the Pennsylvania Leadership Conference, which will be held this Friday, April 5th, and Saturday, April 6th, at the Radisson Penn Harris Convention Center in Camp Hill. This year's featured speaker will be Wall Street Journal columnist and commentator Kimberly Strassel, Jimmy Kemp of the Jack Kemp Foundation, Kay Coles James of the Heritage Foundation, Mark Janis from the Liberty Justice Center, Selena Zito of the Washington Examiner, Tim Gegline from Focus on the Family, U.S. Senator Pat Toomey, Congressman Scott Perry, Cliff Maloney of Young Americans for Liberty, and numerous others will be speaking. There will be panel presentations on key state and national issues, workshops, and the opportunity to network with conservatives from across the state. To learn more and to register for the 2019 Pennsylvania Leadership Conference, go to paleadershipconference.org. The Lincoln Radio Journal is produced weekly by the Lincoln Institute of Public Opinion Research, Incorporated. The Lincoln Institute is completely funded through the generosity of individuals, corporations, and philanthropic foundations. They include the Houston Foundation of Coatesville, the Pennsylvania Manufacturers Association, the Allegheny Foundation of Pittsburgh, and the Worrell Foundation of Carlisle, all of whom have helped to underwrite the costs of this program. Lincoln Radio Journal is a trademark of the Lincoln Institute of Public Opinion Research, Incorporated. Comments and opinions expressed on this program are those of the guests and do not necessarily reflect the views of the Lincoln Institute or of this radio station. From the Lincoln Broadcast Center in Harrisburg, I'm Loman Henry. Thank you for listening to Pennsylvania's most widely broadcast public affairs radio program, Lincoln Radio Journal. Plug into the pulse of Pennsylvania.